Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. We'll also be talking about the latest work in Africa. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited to announce that we have a special guest here with us today. I'd like to welcome Dave McKay, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, welcome.
Good to be here.
Thanks for being on the air with us today.
Yeah, we're actually going to have Jen Colmore, who a lot of you probably out there know also, is going to be joining us in just a little bit. We have an event happening here tomorrow to kind of celebrate our Africa work, and right this second she's furiously working on the latest video. She's on the phone with tech support and is going to be here in just a second when she gets done with them.
Yes, for the annual celebration here in Palo Alto.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Great. And I understand you have some information about some of the work we're doing in Africa.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Jen just got back a couple weeks ago, and so she really has a big picture. I was there in July, and I'm going to talk about the water project, because that's kind of what I've had my fingers and toes in over there. So while we're there in July, we doped out the situation in Cantalumba. And I guess probably I should say, I don't know if all the listeners know even what Cantalumba is. It's a slum on the outskirts of Ndola, Zambia. And Ndola is the second largest city. And, this is one of the poorest countries in the world, and this is one of the poorest, Cantalumba is one of the poorest places in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's quite an amazing place to visit. It's, like these little mud huts with cardboard roofs. Some of them have plastic on top to keep the rain out. It's a mess. No electricity, no really anything, no food, no anything.
Wow.
And, there's a lot that we want to do there. We, as a matter of fact, just bought some property where we're going to put a medical clinic and some other things that probably Jen could tell you about better than I could. But one of the things we want to do is to get some good, clean drinking water to people. Right now, they have water occasionally. It comes in, for part of the day, maybe every other day, but it's polluted. It comes from I don't know where, and it's got all kinds of, bacteria and stuff in it. And the people have been using it for years and are used to it in a sense. But it's not healthy. And, there's people are very sick, a lot of them. And a lot of it's because of the water. They just they're not eating. They don't have good water. So they don't have a way for their bodies to support themselves against all of the, it's not just AIDS. It's malaria and then all of the diseases that kind of are attracted to weak people.
Mm-hmm.
And, so one of the things we want to do is to bring in some clean water. And, our first step was to dig a well, and it's really exciting because we were there and we were kind of doping out the place, and on the edge of the slum, there's this road that goes up to the top of the hill, and I was out there walking around because I was checking out where the main, there's like this big water reservoir that where their water collects whenever they do have water, and we were walking up there, and I realized, this is the place where the well needs to be. And when we got back, I drew, Jen and Sherry were taking off, I drew a little map that said, okay, now here's Cantalumba, here's the road, here are the power lines. If this is where the well needs to be, right here, because it's where the elevation is, and, we can set up a whole delivery system with pipes and stuff. And so they took off, and they went over there, and they found a piece of property that was for sale exactly where those were on the map.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's amazing.
It was really amazing. And, of course, I haven't seen it, so I was just we were just looking at some pictures of it. It looks really stunning.
Oh, I see. So you were there in July, scoped out the whole neighborhood mm-hmm. based on the elevation.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the well should be.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back recently,
mm-hmm.
buy a piece of property that's right there.
Somebody said, well, by the way, here's a spot right here, and it's exactly what we were talking about.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's got an existing building on it that I think is going to serve as a kitchen. We're doing a feeding program there, too, where we're feeding these kids. And so I think it's going to serve as the kitchen. And then there's talk about, putting a medical clinic, and it's just going to kind of expand from there. But that will be the location of the well, and hopefully what we can do is we can pump water. The compound, they call it a compound, which basically means slum, I think.
I see.
It's on sort of a gently sloping hill, and it goes up, and then there's a crest, and then at the crest, there's no houses or anything at the top because it's kind of like a rocky crest, and then it goes down the other side towards towards, you know, downtown Indola, and it kind of, the, you know, the standard of living increases a little bit on the other side of the hill. But if we can put a great big water tank on the top and pump the water up to the top, then we should be able to do a gravity feed and hopefully supply it. Now, I don't know how you know, much water we'll get or anything like that, but hopefully, you know, begin to make a difference for these people with the water and supply them with water that actually will be good for their bodies to consume.
Right. Support them in being healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sounds like it would be make a huge difference over there.
Yeah, and it feels good, just, you know, kind of broaden it out. It's fun. You know, it feels good to be making a difference. And, you know, I like all kinds of things, but at the monastery, I'm the guy who, you know, sticks pipes together a lot of times and digs holes. And, you know, I just like that kind of stuff. And so it's really fun to take these skills that I've picked up over time just doing stuff and then going to Africa and really be able to, just because I have that kind of experience, to be able to see things and see how things could happen and, you know, and all of that. It's just fun to, I feel useful. You know, it's like, yeah. It's like life is act. It's one of those things, yeah. We talk about this all the time where, you know, kind of life is acting through me and I get to just use what I have to serve, and that really feels good.
Yeah. It's exciting to feel useful and participate, as we talk about all the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's great. Dave, we have a caller on the line here.
Yeah, great.
I'd like to welcome Sandra. You're on Open Air with Cher Huber.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Sandra.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I have a problem that I've been wrestling with, and I've trying to make a lot of awarenesses from all that I'm wrestling with, but it feels so insignificant after you talk about all the wonderful things happening in Africa. I'm struggling now.
Uh-huh. And yet it really isn't insignificant, is it?
It's not to me.
No, not to you. Of course not.
Mm-hmm. Having a lot of trouble because my husband most recently had a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
And I'm very close to retirement age, as is he, and it has totally and absolutely changed the entire retirement picture for us financially. And I'm
not
noticing that there's
all,
someone inside of me who's angry and resentful.
Uh-huh. Because of the changes that have happened?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He has chosen a career, and I had a career that came with a pension and all those kinds of things, but he has chosen a career. In fact, he worked two jobs because he really enjoyed them, but, you know, they were fine, but don't come with a pension or any of that. And so the plan was I would retire, and he would just continue to work at these jobs that he enjoyed however much he wanted to, and that would be his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But now it looks like he isn't going to be able to work the way the plan was, and so my retirement is looking like it's going to be the only thing we're going to have, and so I'm struggling and having a lot of resentments.
Uh-huh. And you said that you're aware that it's a part of you who is struggling.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not very proud of that part of me. I would be more proud of a part of me that might surface that says he's a wonderful, loving man, and you should be just grateful that he wasn't taken from you and be delighted to share your retirement with him, even though you won't be able to get to do the things and live the retirement you thought you were going to have.
Uh-huh. So, Sandra, do you know when we talk about self-hatred, do you know what we mean by that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you hear the self-hatred in that point of view?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, and that's where the real suffering is, isn't it? Whoops.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's all these circumstances, and, you know, it's interesting to think about it in the context of Africa because, you know, in some ways you're sharing an experience with the people in Africa because, you know, in Africa, you know, life is totally out of control. For people, they have no way to get what they want, what they need. There, you know, we tend to have kind of an illusion that, you know, we can believe that we can be in control, that we can really kind of, like with your retirement, we can set things up in a way that's kind of solid and that we can count.
My illusion.
Yeah, but it's more illusion, isn't it?
It was. Yes, it is.
And so you're having very much the experience that they're having, and so it's mm-hmm. And in what you were saying that. What I was hearing is that the, you know, if you look at, okay, well, so there's all the circumstances, you know, the stuff that's going on in your retirement with the money and everything.
Right.
And then, but that's not really where the suffering is. The suffering is more in just your relationship with that part of you who is having, you know, the anger and the resentment towards the changes that I've made.
So more of an acceptance. I'm having trouble accepting myself.
Well, how does that feel to you?
Well, it doesn't quite work right for me because I don't want to accept a person who is so selfish.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the self-hatred part, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is going to be kind of bad news, but it's the way it is. That, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, when you say your relationship with yourself, that would be a way to say it, you know, or accepting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to say it would be, you know, your relationship with those feelings, you know, that part of you and that person inside of you who has those feelings in response to what's happening, you know, that relationship is what's going to determine how you live with the changes that are being made.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Could you just say that one more time in a similar fashion?
Yeah, really, you know, I mean, the circumstances are what they are. And, you know, there's it's really easy to see how that would be, you know, frustrating and would produce resentment and anger for somebody who had an expectation for something different. Right? You know, it's just really understandable. Now, if you put yourself in relationship to that part of you who has those feelings, in a way that's judging that person, trying to make that person go away, feeling not proud of that person, like you said,
mm-hmm.
then that's going to be a suffering relationship. I mean, that's going to produce a feeling of, you know, being disconnected from life and not being loved by life and not, you know, not being able to see whatever opportunities, for example, there are in these changes that are occurring for you. If you step into, that's the self-hating relationship.
Yeah.
You know, if you step into a relationship with that part of you that where there's understanding, you know, kind of as if it was your own child, you might say, someone other than you, but someone who you really loved.
Right.
And so there'd be understanding there, you know, because there is a lot to understand in that. I mean, there's a lot of room for sympathy and compassion for someone who's undergoing the experience that she is. If you step into that kind of loving, compassionate relationship with that part of you, then I think what you'll find is your experience will radically change, even in the midst of all these circumstances that are so difficult.
Wow. One more time. You're awesome. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like a paradigm change. Uh-huh. I just need to look at it in a different fashion, and that whole self-hatred piece keeps flying up at me when I least expect it. I know it's there, but I'm never sure what to do with it.
Yeah, and it's hard for all of us. You know, it really is, especially, you know, because those kind of feelings that you're talking about, those are difficult feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't know, most of us, how to handle really big, difficult feelings.
So this really isn't so much that I'm mad at my husband.
No, I don't think so.
No,
he might. You know, he might be the easy target.
Yes.
For this. You know, and that's really convenient for, you know, if what we want to do is if we just want to survive our lives and get through without really experiencing what's possible for us in terms of really taking care of ourselves. Then that, you know, that's really easy and convenient to do. It's just, you know, blame other people or focus on the outside. But if what we really want to do is to really offer ourselves the difference that we want to make for ourselves, and this is what I meant when I said it was, you know, this is kind of the bad news. You know, we have to be willing to turn our attention here, you know, mm-hmm. to me, to what's going on inside of me, because that's always where the suffering is and where the difficulty is.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sandra. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest today, Dave McKay, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and it's great to have him on the air. Dave, we have another caller.
Okay, let's go for it.
I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Beth.
Hello.
Hey, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm okay. It's always interesting calling into the radio show.
Uh-huh.
Just because I'm fine, and then I'm on the air, and all of a sudden it's, oh, my God.
Yep. I know exactly what you mean. What's going on?
Well, it was really interesting listening to you talking about Africa.
Uh-huh.
Pittsburgh recently sent in a donation to kind of assist in that work.
Uh-huh.
And kind of looking at how, it was a very small thing that toward the whole large thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really not a small thing, is it?
It really isn't. Just the sense of connection.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, you know, the being useful and kind of seeing things happen.
Mm-hmm. And did you share my experience? I was talking a little while ago about how good that feels. Is that?
Yeah, just to be of service.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like it's like life has a purpose, meaning, which isn't which isn't true, but it's life is tastier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've been looking at that for myself just over and over and over again that, you know, I mean, we have such a devotion to, you know, serving me as a, you know, that's how we're conditioned, you know, to serve me, serve my wants, serve.
And a lot of that's unconscious.
Yeah, all of it is. That's what unconsciousness is, we might say, is serving this small identity who I think is me.
Yeah.
And what a difference it makes when we get it that, you know, that's not what life is all about. You know, life
is about. That's not what life is all about.
No, it really isn't. It's about giving that over to, you know, giving that small focus up, we might say, and stepping into this much larger place where we're just willing to give ourselves to what is. And that might look really tiny. It might look like just smiling at someone or taking the time to give attention to the people in our lives or whatever it might be. But in no matter what kind of we're doing on kind of the outside level, on the inside level, it's always a gigantic movement because that's really, you know, that's the movement away from suffering and from limitation to, you know, to life and to expansiveness.
It's kind of what I was really kind of getting on a different level today, mm-hmm. is just the power of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like that expansive space. I've done something that's pretty unskillful. And, of course, I need to be, you know, beaten up for it.
Uh-huh. Right.
And instead, I got a kind response from somebody. And just kind of watched how I had all this stuff going on about what it means to be unskillful and what a horrible person I am, and just receiving that kindness where I was expecting a beating.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of like, crumbled the whole thing.
Yeah, it really makes it hard to believe you're a bad person, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been finding how hard it is to be kind to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear how I'm beating myself up for not being kind to myself.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the last frontier, isn't it? You know, to turn it inside. You know, to do it outside. I mean, do it outside is really challenging a lot of times too. But you know, we can kind of get that, and we kind of learn to see. You know how it is when you see someone and then you think you know them. Or you know who they are, and then suddenly you really see them. It's kind of like you see through the idea you have of them, and you see really right into who that person is.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you know, there is. It's like kindness or compassion or whatever is kind of the automatic result of that.
Right. Exactly. Because the sense when I'm trying to be kind, mm-hmm. there's like this. It comes out as a way of making myself safe.
Right.
Like if I can make you happy, then I won't be in trouble.
Right. Yeah, trying to be kind and being kind are two really different things, aren't they?
Right. Even though, yeah, and it's kind of like finding, it's like just kind of like allowing that kindness to be.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and then, of course, to take that, you know, I mean, to take that ability we have to be kind. I mean, we might even say that kindness is who we are, you know, when we stop doing all of the crazy things that we do.
Yeah.
But to be able to take that kindness that we are, and then to be able to see ourselves in the way that we can see the people that we love in our lives, you know,
yeah.
to kind of see through the idea I have of me, which is, you know, generally for people, you know, full of judgment and self-hatred and wishing I was different and those sorts of things. And to be able to see through that for me, to be able to see myself in the same way that I'm innocent, you know, that who I am is someone as much or more than anyone else in the world who deserves my kindness.
Yes. Yes. And that deserving kindness. You know, it's like so often I give kindness over to being right.
Being liked?
Being right, yeah.
Or
it's like
right.
I'd rather be right than kind.
Yeah. Well, we feel
to
like
myself or to anybody else.
Uh-huh. Well, we feel like we have to deserve it. That's what self-hate is all about. You know, when we were talking about it with the last caller, I mean, well, I have to be right, the right person.
I have
inside.
To be right. Yep. And if you're not right, then I don't have to give you kindness.
Exactly. You know, and that's really what self-hate is. I don't deserve to have what I want. I don't deserve to feel loved. I don't deserve to feel, you know, a part of everything and like I belong and like I'm someone who for whom kindness is a reality as much as anyone else.
Yes.
And so it's so hard with that. It's kind of like this having this thing right in front of our eyes that we can't see through. It, you know, it says, you don't deserve this. And so without a lot of practice, we can't see past that when we look at ourselves. And so it's like, you know, we might be showering the rest of the world with kindness, but we're left out of it. As long as that, you know, I don't deserve it stays in place.
Yes. Yeah, it's so simple.
Uh-huh. Simple. Yeah, and really good, isn't it, to be in a place where you can sort of be watching how that's happening.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like a bowing, humble kind of place that just allows it to happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm, exactly. And even something like, you know, whatever the thing that you're calling unskillful is that happened, you know, from the point of view of self-hatred, that, you know, that was just a bad thing that you should be beaten up for. But from,
yeah,
this, from the point of view of the kindness that we're talking about, that's the, here's a place where it's like life giving you an opportunity for it to learn how to be kind to yourself. Kind of like life saying, here,
yes,
here you go. This is it. Let's see if we can do this. Let's practice.
Yes. Yes. And then just like this thing that I've been working on for several days, this story that had been going on in my head for several days, in receiving the kindness, it just crumbled.
Mm-hmm.
Like it didn't matter.
Yeah, well, it crumbled because you were willing for it.
Yeah.
I hope that's something that you've seen also, because, you know, you wouldn't have to, it's not a necessary experience in a sense that, like, automatic, that
right,
someone's kind to you, and then you drop the story and receive the kindness and realize that, you know, that what you've been, the self-hate that you've been believing isn't true. That only happens,
yeah,
if you're willing to be kind to yourself.
Well, it actually took me a while to accept the kindness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I groveled enough.
Yeah. Well, and what I would imagine happened is, you know, someone was kind to you. You saw in that person the reflection of your own compassion, and because you were willing to, you dropped the standard. You dropped the, you know, I have to deserve this first, and then just went right to the place where you could receive it. And even, you know, of course, it's not coming from the other person.
No.
It seems like it, but, you know, when we have, mm-hmm, these experiences, it's because we've given that to ourselves. It may be that we saw the reflection of what's possible in another person, but without that willingness to say yes to ourselves in that way and to relate to ourselves not from a place of self-hatred, then it ain't going to happen. You know, we're just,
yeah,
going to say, well, they don't know what they're talking about, or, you know, I mean, you know, that's baloney or whatever. We'll just go off hating ourselves in the way that we always have.
Right. Right. Yes. And I feel like I'm receiving kindness now from you.
Yeah, well, that's
in
the
radio show.
That's the part you have to own. That's what we were just talking about. Yeah, that's coming from you, actually. Okay, Beth.
Thank
well,
you
we
very
we
got
to we're going to have to go because
okay,
I think we got a commercial,
yep,
break. Is that right?
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, thanks, Beth.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have two special guests today, Dave McKay and Jen Colmore from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And we have one more caller.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to welcome Susan in California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. I have two things to talk about.
Okay.
One is during sitting meditation here in my home. What happens, there's no real pattern to it, but it does happen, is while I'm sitting on the cushion, my body will start to sway.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very pleasant feeling.
Uh-huh.
It feels very organic. It,
uh-huh,
it feels like energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just want to ask your discussion about that.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Absolutely.
What is your relationship with it?
I love it. I think it's positive. I think it means that something is moving where I've been feeling very stagnant in my life.
Mm-hmm. So
that when that swaying happens, it feels like there's energy in the body.
Mm-hmm. So may I offer a suggestion?
Please.
That's the place to look.
What's the place?
In your relationship with it. Now it sounds like it's very pleasant for you.
Yes.
But to start to have thoughts about how this is positive, that this means certain things. That's the movement.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I was calling you about.
Right.
Talk
exactly.
About.
Yeah.
So
what you want to go for there is to just allow it to be what it is.
Yes. Which I was. Okay. Mhm.
and to yeah, and to not have a relationship with it. Once you start to have a relationship with it, it starts to be conditional, and then you're not available to whatever it has to offer to you.
Yeah, could you explain more? I don't get the bridge between having the relationship to it and then it's that means it's conditional. What does that actually mean?
Well, tell me, this is what you were saying, that, you know, so it's going on. There's an experience in your body that's happening. There's the swaying that's going on. And then there starts to be thoughts about it.
You mean, that it feels pleasant.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That doesn't seem like a thought, but...
Well, the reason I said that is when I asked you what your relationship was with it, you said that, you know, that it was pleasant, mm-hmm. and then you said it was positive, and then it means, and then you said what it means. And if you kind of look at that
right.
as a process,
yeah.
then what that is that's the movement away from the experience into conditioned mind.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You see what I mean? Now, that experience is going to be whatever it is. And if you can stay in that experience and not go into conditioned mind and relationship to it, then it will have something to offer to you, whatever it might be. But if you start to go down the road where you start having a relationship with it, in the sense of you start thinking about it, you start kind of deciding what that means.
Well, the other part of that was I didn't say yet, you know, certainly from past readings, I was starting to be thinking about it in terms of it being a kundalini energy moving up the spine.
Right.
Yeah.
So all those, you know, to have any kind of, that's where the relationship is, and that's where it starts to be conditional. Now, that's not to say that, you know, you as you're in the experience and having the experience, that, you know, you might have insights arise about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, oh, wow, that's really interesting. But, you know, the trick is to stay in the experience. So even when those insights arise, to see what that insight is, and then just let it go. Because if you attach onto it at all and start to go in the direction where the thoughts will lead you,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, towards meaning, towards making something out of it, towards building a relationship with it, then you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it takes you away from the experience that has something to offer to you, which will always happen in the moment and outside of conditioned mind, you know, outside of that, all those thoughts and that relationship.
You know, what I'm aware of is originally what I was going to ask about this, and I was aware of it, and then it was coming to the show to ask someone if it was okay.
Uh-huh.
And I had insight into that.
Uh-huh.
And then switched it to, I just want to get some thoughts about it. But maybe that's a similar thing, or opinions, or how this fits or doesn't fit into the... it's looking for the right way to do it.
Yeah, so that would be another kind of relationship, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the same... It's exactly the same thing in terms of the process, because, you know, starting to wonder, you know, is this the right thing, is another way to take you away from the experience.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to have it's using different language and has a different, a different content in it that attracts your attention.
This is reminding me of another experience I had a couple of months ago that I really want back, and it hasn't happened since in meditation,
mm-hmm.
which was very affirming, very positive, both in something I heard, I heard like as words in my head or from, but not coming from me, and in terms of the physical
mm-hmm.
experience of sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that, there's like a small longing for that again, and thinking that that's what I should get back to because it was so positive and I need that.
Uh-huh. And can you, I can't tell as you're describing that whether you can hear in that what we've been talking about?
Yeah, very much.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's what reminded me of it.
Yeah, it's the same thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what the fun thing about this is that if you find the willingness to let go of that experience,
mm-hmm.
then you'll have the experience again.
Yeah.
You don't want to take that as something to go for, but it's just one of those little kind of fun tricks in Zen where, you know, that's just how it works. You know, as long as we're holding on to something, we're keeping it away. If we let go of that, then that makes the opening for that experience to happen again.
So when the thought comes up for it, it's just a matter of seeing that, observing that thought is there, and moving on.
Yeah, well, what you can do is, and it's actually even more kind of tangible and practical than that.
Mm-hmm.
You can take your attention. See, what that thought does is it's attempting to distract your attention. That's all it's doing. It's trying to take your attention off into conditioned mind. Instead, if you can see the thought as it's happening and then turn your attention to the sensation. So like with the first question, that's really, or actually both of them, but in particular your first one, that's going to be very a very tangible thing to do because it feels good. You can feel it in your body.
Right.
Right? So turn your attention back to that.
I see.
And what you'll do is that will be the movement towards, you know, the present moment and towards being here rather than going off into conditioned mind. It's nice to have something really tangible like that as sort of an anchor for the attention because, you know, the whole game that we're playing here is about our attention. You know, if conditioned mind can take your attention and kind of lead it off into, you know, the fantasy world that it lives in, then that's how it caused you to suffer. That's how it caused you to build relationships with your internal experience that takes you away from the moment. But if you can bring your attention back here, And you know, to have something to put it on, like that sensation, is really handy because that sensation is here. You bring your attention back here, and then you're essentially saying no to conditioned mind and saying yes to the life that's available to you here in the moment.
What that brings up to me in terms of sensation, then, is, well, that's a, quote, positive sense. That's positive. But I also have sensations which don't feel good in my body that are very fear-based.
Uh-huh. See, the thing is, there's no such thing as positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the trap. You know, that's part of the, you know, if conditioning can get you to believe in the reality of positive and negative or any other duality, then that's the first step out of just being present in that sensation or that whatever the experience is that you're having off into the world of duality and, you know, conditioned mind and the way that it presents itself.
Okay. Either way, it makes you want to go towards something or away from something.
Yeah, to say that's positive, that's just another thought.
Yes.
That's the first step away from the experience. See, that's the whole trick in practice, is to stay in experience and not live in thought. It's just the hard part is conditioning knows exactly how to throw thoughts at us that we'll believe and then will take us out of the experience that we're having.
I guess what is confusing to me is when the experience is in my gut or solar plexus and it feels very fear-filled,
mm-hmm.
Of course I don't want to stay there with it.
Right. Well, conditioning doesn't want to.
I see.
Yeah, I think what you'll find is if you...
How do I stay with it?
Well, in the same way that we're talking about, it's a matter of your attention. If you can allow your attention to be there in that sensation, then you'll find, I think what you'll find is your experience is very different from what you anticipate. Because even something like fear, that's another thought. To say it's fear-based, that's just another decision that's been made outside of the experience.
Okay.
If you actually drop any relationship with it, any mental thinking kind of relationship with the sensation that you're having, and just feel the feeling in it.
That was my next question. When you say stay with it, you mean you just sit there while it's going on?
Yeah, keep your attention on it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't allow your attention to be taken away into a thought about it.
Okay.
If you can allow your attention just to stay in there in the experience, then I predict that you'll have a very different experience than what it looks like outside of the experience, trying to imagine what would happen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, in the second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. We're also talking about the latest work in Africa. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Dave, we have another caller here.
Great.
I'd like to welcome Cindy from San Mateo. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello there.
Hey, Cindy.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good, you?
Good. I've been looking at something interesting. I've been sort of seeing in my practice that I have segments of time where I feel I can be feel disidentified for like a chunk of time, like, you know, 2 days.
Wow, that's
and
pretty good.
just not get caught up in the thing.
Uh-huh.
And then at that point, of course, I think, wow, I've seen it. I've seen it. It'll never get me again. And
everybody on the out there in Radio Land is chuckling at this moment.
But it's because when it happens, though, it feels like I can see it. Like about 2 weeks ago, the feeling that I had and I had been going through my day, and I was living life, and the whole time the voices in my head were like having a color commentary on my whole day. They're saying you shouldn't be doing this, you're not going to have enough time for this, you should do this instead of that. And I kept just having my day,
uh-huh.
And then but I kept doing what I was doing, but I could hear this voice. And somehow throughout at the end of the day, it was a Tuesday night, so I went to group, and I described that, and the guide said, well, that's what it's doing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I sort of like, wow, I see that. It's like a whole other life, and it's not me. I'm the one that's just living life, and this is this other entity that I sort of carry around with me all the time.
Yeah, you were outside of conditioning.
I was outside of conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted in that same profound, like, real split kind of way,
mm-hmm.
for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, wow, I see it. It's amazing. I can see that it's just like not me.
Uh-huh.
I've never had quite so much separation.
Yeah, it's really fun, isn't it?
It's amazing. But so of course, as you can tell, I'm back in it, and I can't believe I'm back in it.
Uh-huh.
And over the last 2 days, I've been really back in it, and I've, you know, I try to say, well, you know, you can remember that experience you just had like a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, whatever, meditate, no, and I'm meditating, my mind's all over the place,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, it's so disheartening.
Uh-huh. Now, were you, when we were talking just a minute ago before the break, and talking about that relationship,
yeah,
were you relating to that at all?
I was, and so I was relating to that, but I feel like this conditioning is like waiting,
mm-hmm.
always to pounce on me.
Uh-huh.
And if something's going on that I'm feeling a little weak, it's going to get me again. So that's just like, wow, you know, it's just going to be there the whole time. I'm never going to be free of this.
Mm-hmm. And where would you say, where are you speaking from now? Would you say you're speaking from a, you know, kind of a centered, expansive place, or speaking from
Well, you put it like that.
Yeah. You're speaking from the relationship that we were talking about. You know, it's the trickiest thing in the world because, okay, so you're having, you know, this expansive experience, and for a while it sounds like it just was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You were outside of conditioning. You're really seeing conditioning, and like you say, it's really, it's fun. It's exciting. It's mm-hmm. it's fascinating to be able to experience something that's always been invisible and seemed real in a way where we can really see it and really see that it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And then, here's what I project happened. You know, over time, that became something that you like.
No, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I tell you why?
I don't think I was conscious of the moment when I slipped back. What I think happens is I have an insight or have some level of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And then what my conditioning does is it thinks about it and analyzes it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the beginning of the relationship.
So it's like, oh, you know, it's got lots to say about everything that I experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sort of eventually takes it back from sort of this open, it just happened, isn't that interesting, to something that it's got its clutches on.
And the thing to catch on to is that it's not a sudden process.
Mm. Right.
What you're talking about. Now, it seems like it because, you know, what happens, especially with those kind of expansive experiences is, you know, what I meant when I said, you know, it becomes something that you like was, you know, it's exciting, and so we start thinking about it. You know what I mean? And it starts to get our attention, not in the way that got us to that experience, but in a way that starts to build this relationship where now I become a somebody, you know, an identity in relationship to this experience that I've been having.
Right.
And in that movement, I have abandoned the experience.
Right.
I've left the experience of just being, which is what that insight comes from, to an experience of being I instead of just being. And that's the movement away. That's the movement into the relationship, and that's the movement into suffering.
Right. I see that, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how it happened.
Yeah. Of course, the trick is, you know, so then that happens, and then your experience begins to change,
mm-hmm.
right? It's no longer, you know, expansive and full of all those kind of possibilities anymore. It starts to contract. And so what we want to do is we kind of turn that into something to have a relationship with, too, and say, okay, now I don't like this. I want to be back to that other experience.
Right.
But, you know, if the trick is, okay, so now my experience has changed. If I can stay in the same relationship, well, that's not the right way to say it, actually. If I can stay in the same non-relationship
right. yes.
with this experience, it doesn't matter if it's one that I like or that I don't like.
Yeah.
I can still be present in relationship to that because I'm not having a relationship with that, if that makes any sense.
Right. I do understand that because I see what happened is I said, oh, I had this experience. It wasn't even an experience. I had this sort of, I just saw this thing. And then...
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, well, I want to stay there.
Right, exactly.
How can I stay there?
Yeah.
Why am I not staying there?
Right. So we might say in the experience itself, you're not having a relationship with
life.
Yeah,
it's just happening, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just being life.
Yeah, right.
And that's the magic. That's what's possible for all of us is, you know, you have to take this not as something to strive for because that's just another relationship. But, you know, that's what's possible for all of us. is to live life instead of live in relationship with life. But of course it's just about the hardest thing for a human being to do because we have such a deep conditioning to be somebody in relationship to the experience we're having that's at a distance and is separate from the experience that we're having.
Right. Right. So that's interesting. I just saw something there because when I'm fully identified, and I'm thinking, I just want to drop this, but it does, you know, I can't drop it.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the dropping it means that I'm still in relationship to it.
Absolutely.
Like there's nothing to drop. It's just, because I've never understood, what I've experienced is when I go into, you know, it's like, watch what comes up.
Uh-huh.
Watch what comes up. And I find, like, well, that's like hard work watching uh-huh. what comes up. I just want to not watch. I just want to, like, get on with whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, see me jumping up and down here on the telephone.
Oh, okay.
This is it. I mean, there is nothing to drop. I mean, that's such a radical thought. I mean, from inside it, it's like, what do you mean there's nothing to drop? That's crazy. You know, it's everything to drop. I'm having an experience I don't want. Of course right. there's something to drop. But to get it that there is nothing to drop because that entire thing is an illusion. That entire relationship is just something I'm making up to keep me out of the experience of being alive.
Right. Because I could see that, okay, so I'm identified, and I know what happens is it's like thinking is taking the next step. Thinking says you got to drop this.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking says, you know, come back to your breath. It's got all these things.
Mm-hmm.
They're like tools. And somewhere in the process of doing those things, I'm suffering even more.
Yeah, but the point.
I saw something that when you were saying it's like, you don't.
You don't have to do that.
You don't even have to do that. It's even less effort. It's less effort than that.
Yeah, it's effortless. It really is. Just to be alive is the least effortful thing there is.
Yeah,
because
right.
you know when we're actually being life, and then we are. You might say we. I don't know how to, you can't even talk about it really, but we're aligned with life. It's like we're plugged into all the energy that is life because that's who we are. when we're in relationship with life, it takes an incredible amount of work because we have to every moment be telling ourselves some kind of a story that we'll believe
yeah.
to keep us separate from life. And that's just a full-time, every second, every, you know, with all of my attention kind of a job to be able to pull that off because life is so huge and so compelling.
Yeah. I think what conditioning has set up is that life, as we talk about it in practice, conditioning had made something up about that. It said life is the time when you're not suffering, and the other thing is not the life, not life. So therefore, conditioning says any time you're suffering, you're not in that flow.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case, or let me say that I realize now that the minute I then have a relationship with that suffering, I'm not saying it right, but I can feel it.
Yeah, well, I think I know exactly what you're saying. You know,
yeah.
we might say that anything that conditioning tells you, it doesn't even matter what it's
saying. Yeah, right.
It's not true.
Right.
Because the only reason it's saying it to you, is to try to get you to become an I. You know, somebody who's to become someone who's separate from the life that just flows inside of you.
Yeah.
Because if you believe a thought, even one thought, if you believe that that's true, you have just become an I. And in that, you are suddenly separate from the life that's in you. And, you know, that's where all the suffering in the world comes from. You know, all the desperation, all the loneliness, all the frustration, all the, you know, kind of the you know, kind of adrenaline-filled, you know, excitement and drama that goes on everywhere, which is another form of suffering. It all comes from that separation and just from believing something that conditioned mind presents as real. Suddenly, I am somebody who believes that, and I'm separate from life, and I'm lost. You know, I'm off in suffering land instead of just being present to the life that's here inside of me.
But conditioning is about to speak.
Okay.
And it says,
thanks for the warning.
Conditioning says, but in our daily practice, we say we are here in suffering. So conditioning says, well, but even by virtue of this practice, we're supposed to end suffering. So if I'm still suffering, I'm not doing the practice.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's, and I imagine that you can hear in that, you know, that's exactly what we're talking about. Here comes a sort of a chain of thoughts that sound reasonable. They present a point of view to get you to believe.
Uh-huh.
If you believe and align yourself with that point of view, you have just disconnected yourself from life.
Right.
See, the trick is, you know, we just can't think.
Right.
You know, as soon as we start thinking, we're lost, essentially.
Right. Well, that sounds like you just got a cue that we need to wrap up. So that's been fantastic. I'm glad to have had the opportunity to talk about it out loud and get it out from the shadows again.
Yeah, it's always good to do.
And so thank you very much
thanks,
for your words.
Yeah, sure. Take care.
Okay, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Cindy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We've had a special guest with us today, Dave McKay from the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and we're approaching the top of the hour, and
okay.
We have one more caller.
Okay, great.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Welcome, George.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you? What's going on?
Good. Well, I had a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
And I just love that sharing that just went on. That was incredible. It was kind of like polishing a stone.
Uh-huh.
You know, really, really bringing out the clarity of that. It was beautiful. I was my first question is I was reading Trying to Be Human for the first time the other night.
Uh-huh.
And
Trying to Be Human is one of Sherry's books, in case anybody
doesn't
know that.
Right. And Sherry writes, once it is okay to be unhappy, once it is as okay to be unhappy as it is to be happy, there's no more charge to it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we are truly free.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we were just talking about, isn't it?
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yep. That it's almost like, well, yeah, wait a minute, this practice is supposed to lead to happiness. It's supposed to lead away from unhappiness to happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you be unhappy at the same time be in this practice? But in actuality, what it seems to me happens is that once you accept the unhappiness, and the unhappiness is okay,
mm-hmm.
then where is it?
That's right.
You know, it's gone. Because if things are okay, I mean, they're okay.
Mm-hmm. And when that is happening, George, would you call your experience being happy?
When what is that?
When that happens for you, when you see the unhappiness, you accept the unhappiness, you realize it's not a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would call that being happy.
Yeah, yeah, and I would too. But it's a different kind of happiness than most people think.
Yeah,
about,
yeah, yeah. It's not happiness like I'm getting what I want or my expectations are being fulfilled or things are the way they're quote unquote supposed to be or the way conditioning says they're supposed to be. Whatever, they just simply are what they are,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. What most people call happiness is really kind of a pathetic sort of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
right.
Without any kind of judgment, but it's, you know, people don't have, if you don't have another experience of it, then, you know, it's just really too bad that people settle for getting what I want or, more realistically, trying to get what I want and then not having it not be what I really wanted.
Right.
That is the process that motivates people instead of this other kind of happiness that you're talking about, which really comes from, it really isn't being determined by anything on the outside or even any of our, our internal experiences.
Yeah.
We're just in accepting what is, even if what is exactly what, you know, from past points of view, we might say is exactly what we don't want.
Yeah.
Even in accepting that, that's what produces this deeper, more real kind of happiness.
And right, and it goes beyond happiness, and it sinks into this kind of ocean of joy,
mm-hmm.
which is always there.
Yep, it's
unless we, you know, as you were saying before, unless we take on that I and become separate from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we might say in a way, even that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we can't even
exactly because you know once awareness sees that, that's okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's just the next thing to accept and let go of.
Right.
On our way to living in the moment and experiencing, you know, this other kind of happiness that we're talking about that lives in the moment with us.
Yeah. So there's a lot of accept and let go of, accept and let go of, accept mm-hmm. and let go of, and continuing to return to now,
mm-hmm.
here.
Yeah.
What is.
Yep, that's the whole deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Wow.
Yeah, well, somebody earlier said, you know, it's just so simple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just you know, and it's the hardest thing in the world to do.
Yeah, right. Takes practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and all the things that we've been talking about tonight takes practice. It takes, a dedication of our attention. And, you know, earlier we were talking about kindness. It takes that, too. It takes a willingness to accept this person and the experiences that he's or she is having with all of the kindness and the compassion that we might offer to a young child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay.
Now, I had another question. I don't know if we still have any time. I had just another quick question.
We got 1 minute.
Minute?
Uh-huh.
Okay. In meditating, when I'm meditating, my mind doesn't quit. I catch myself thinking over and over again, and I try to bring myself back to the breath, which I do, and I'm able to count 1 to 10 perfectly, count my breaths 1 to 10, and at the same time, my mind's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of almost like it's on again, off again kind of thing. And some of the thoughts seem to be, you know, kind of creative, intuitive, insightful, and so on. I'm just wondering what's really going on there. You know, how...
Well, there's one thing that's going on there, which you may or may not be allowing yourself to see,
uh-huh.
which is that you're aware of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because it's not, you know, meditation practice is not about making the thoughts go away,
but becoming
aware of what's there. And, and I'm projecting that's very much the experience you're having.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch them come and go. You can say what kinds of thoughts they are.
You're
noticing that.
Yeah. You know,
that's the part, though, that's hard for us to recognize because it's hard for us to allow ourselves that kind of credit, you might say. Say, you know, well, what's really going on here, it's not that I'm getting caught in thinking. It's that I'm being aware. I'm watching my mind think.
Right.
It's two really different things.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That clears it all up.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Well. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm getting the sign here, George. I think.
Yeah. Oh, good talking to you, Dave.
Good talking to you too.
Thanks very much, and thank you, Michael, very much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Wonderful program.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. Yeah. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, George. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber, and David's been a great thrill to have you on the show here today.
Yeah, really fun as always.
Okay, we'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take care. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.